We have keys in hand. It's very efficient. We can move about, break through barriers, and so forth. So that metaphor today, keys to inner fulfillment. And just the another interesting aspect of the title is that what is fulfillment? And we think about fulfillment or contentment, and we can always consider that the word content also can be pronounced content. Say content. Now say content. It's spelled the same way. But if we consider that we're containers, and what do we put within the container? That makes all the difference in the world. We're open to the information of the world and the various vibrations that are floating around here and there. And it's our choice. And we have a great gift as humans that we get to choose where we focus our consciousness. So today, my hope is to give you a thought or two that might give you an edge in your life, a key to open up a door that you haven't opened before, or you can do it more efficiently, as you can walk away with something practical. We'll talk about some theoretical things and some practical things today. But before I go on, I would like to hear from a few of you what brought you to this gathering today. What was the one thing that you noticed in the title, or did somebody tell you you should come, or you just needed a place to have your lunch or something like that? What is the one thing? Can some of you remember what brought you here? Go ahead and feel free. We're just among friends here. You can just speak freely. You have one? Okay. And we're going to have a microphone runner here, just because the more we can hear, the more information goes in, the better it is.
So as you were saying, the title itself is very intriguing.
What about it was intriguing to you specifically?
Fulfillment, like the inner fulfillment.
Okay.
Those two words, like what is inner fulfillment?
Inner fulfillment, yeah. And intel inside. Yeah, there's an acknowledgement that there's things happen from the inside out, and inner fulfillment is very important. There's a way in which I may fill up my environment with all kinds of things, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I can appreciate them. So inner fulfillment has a certain ring to it. Thank you. What else? What one thing attracted you to come today? Was it the title or something else? A few more.
Conscious living.
Yeah. Okay, what about conscious living? What was it that specifically interested you?
Okay. Well, I think that's something that...
That needs to go up just a tad.
That's missing. We are not always conscious.
And okay.
We are acting on mind and thoughts are what driving us and not...
Very interesting. So there's a way in which you're saying you can be living but not be conscious. Have you ever been reading a book and you went through a full paragraph and then realized you were thinking about something else? And although your eyes scanned every single word, you were thinking about the fact that you hadn't paid your taxes or something like that, or that you had a project due. So there is a way in which I can go through various motions without being conscious. So it's not redundant to say conscious living necessarily, because we can separate the two, right? So you're attracted by those words in the title. Nice. What else? What thing attracted you to come here today? What thing did you have in your mind? What did you hope to get or see or hear? One thing. Take two more. Yes, one, two. Thank you.
At Intel, we have these values, which are probably common in Silicon Valley, and one of them is results orientation. And so we're all very focused on the output and the result. And so sometimes I think, you know, we don't focus enough on, you know, what's happening, you know, inside and how are we experiencing the journey. So, you know, for me, just finding the balance between those two is something that I'd like to be better at.
Oh, that's very helpful. Thank you very much. And oftentimes, it's especially in the context of yoga, which I'll be referring to various texts, wisdom texts from the yogic writings. And they point out that if one is more efficient inwardly and more aware and conscious and fulfilled, for that matter, then one becomes more efficient and one gets better results externally also. I have a good friend who is an excellent manager. I grew up as a monk. When I was 16, I became very interested in internal life and mindfulness and so forth. And I was able to dedicate my life to that kind of practice throughout my life. Later on, helping to organize some of the ashrams, monasteries around the world, got more entangled in things like management rather than just contemplation and meditation and so forth. So I once asked a colleague who was more experienced than me, what is the secret to management? And he said, your first duty is to always be blissful. Because if you're not blissful, then you can't be an efficient manager. So there's a way in which by developing some inner fulfillment, then one tends to be more affable. One tends to have a better perspective, a perspective that helps you deal with circumstances rather than just reacting. You can choose the appropriate response and so forth. So I very much appreciate why you're here. Yes, sir.
Art of living, and I do practice meditation, and I'm always open to new ideas and learning new things. So I think this attracted me, and maybe I can learn something new today.
What a pleasure to be in the company of somebody who loves to learn. And it's very important. I mean, actually, universities first sprung up in the world because there's a natural human impetus to want to bring knowledge together and be in the same place with others who are eager to learn and try to consume the best of what's out there, isn't it? Why else make a library? That's a very civilized thing to do, very human thing to do. And so this love for learning never has to stop or plateau. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I'm going to mention these three keys and make a few comments about them, and then we'll continue as we have from the very start with sharing some ideas. So I call them reflections. It means if you hear something that sticks in your mind, perhaps it seems useful to you, or it's something that you feel like, oh, I'm going to take that out of here with me in my pocket, and I'm going to try it out. Those are the kind of things you can reflect back, anything that you hear. And you'll find that just like a transistor, a chip, how many of them fit on a silicon space? 30 billion fit. Those little transistors, one of their jobs is to amplify things. The information goes in one side and it gets amplified on the other. Am I correct? I just read it on the internet. So in the same way, when we reflect, we act like a transistor. I'm just a little electron over here. But hopefully when it comes out from your side, it'll get amplified. The ideas will get amplified. And the more we can do that in a group like this, the more we can churn and bring out something that's essential. That's what we're hoping for today. So these are from my own practice and realization, these three keys. And the first one is attention. Just dim light just for a second so you can get a clearer look at this picture, because I'd like you to see it. Turn the light off. Is that clear? Okay, that's good. So I appreciated that this little fellow had his attention fixed in one place as a context for this first key for inner fulfillment. And how is it a key to inner fulfillment? A mantra that I've lived with for many years is where attention goes, energy flows. And I'd like to, if you don't already know this mantra, or if you do, I'm going to renew it for you. But Please repeat after me. Where attention goes, energy flows. One more time, but a little louder. Where attention goes, energy flows. This is perhaps one of the most useful time management tools that you can use, that anyone can use, to remember that wherever you're placing your attention at any given time, your energy will follow. And in a similar way, as far as our involvement with the world and the way that it reciprocates with us, or that other people reciprocate with us, or other living beings, our attention is essential. And one of the great keys to fulfillment in life is relationships. Do you agree? Say yes. Yes, relationships are vital. If you were given a very expensive house, let's say we'll give you a penthouse at the top of which tower would you like? Where? The Eiffel Tower. I'm not sure if they're renting that out yet. Well, I was just in New York last weekend, and we had a friend that was atop of one of the Trump Towers, so we went up to the top, and he had a panoramic view up there and everything like that. And if you can imagine, someone gives you something like that, but you're all by yourself, and there's no interaction, no pets, no plants, no people. How long will you be satisfied? Our environment is not what's important, but it's our relationships. So one of the great keys to relationships, this is such a simple thing, but it can be overlooked, is our attention. Now, recently I was at a meeting. It was a seven-day meeting I had to attend, and I was on a break. And I was sitting there dutifully taking my break, resting my brain, and a very enthusiastic colleague came up and sat next to me. And I could tell that he wanted to ask me questions and impart some wisdom to me. So he sat down, and I was thinking as he sat down, I don't really want to talk right now. I'm a little bit fatigued. And as I noticed his enthusiasm, I thought, now I have a choice. I can just tolerate him and listen to what he has to say in a half-hearted way, or I can give him my full attention. And so I decided on the latter, to give my full attention, because I had actually been speaking about attention and giving others attention, and I decided that I would put it to practice. So I was sitting in my chair, and he sat next to me, and his chair was facing the same direction. And he started to speak to me, and when I made my decision, I turned my chair, and I faced him like this, eye to eye. And suddenly, he jumped, and and his countenance brightened. And immediately, I could tell he was enthused even more than he had been before. And he actually said, well, no one's ever done that before, to give that much attention. I wasn't doing it pretentiously. I was doing it sincerely, but I was definitely giving him my attention. And what resulted was I made a firm friendship with that person. He was so appreciative that I gave him attention that there was a bond. We made a bond. I made a bond with him, and he made one back. And this is one of the keys to fulfillment, especially in relationship with people. There's ways in which I may go through a relationship. I may have a spouse, significant other, friend, and I may give half attention. Is that possible? Is it possible to be in a relationship with somebody and give them only partial attention? How so? What would that look like? Who would like to say? Okay, give the mic. You're in a relationship, and you're right here.
The buzzword these days is multitasking, right? So
yeah.
You are in...
So set up a scenario for us. So you're with somebody else, and...
you are with somebody else and you're still texting and doing something on the WhatsApp.
Oh, you're texting.
Something else,
okay.
Right? Something there.
You're texting.
Right? So
okay.
That's the split attention.
Keep talking.
Yeah.
Keep telling me.
Same thing. I mean, it's being done every day. I mean, if you go to a restaurant nowadays, I mean, like the young, the people are sitting across the dining table and then, you know, even the spouses are like messaging on the WhatsApp.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so,
thanks.
So that's the thing.
No, really, thanks. Give me a hand. For being a good sport. Now, I have a friend that I sometimes talk to on Skype. He lives in another country. And we have to have a lot of conversations. He's my editor. And he has a habit of looking at his watch while we're talking. So I'm talking to him about something that's meaningful to me. And all of a sudden he goes like this. And how long did that take, approximately? How long does this take? 2 seconds? Maybe even half a second. Now, here's how I feel. He looks at his watch, and I immediately say, okay, you got to go. I got to go, too. See you later. Bye. And he goes, no, hold it, hold it. And I analyze this. If you're standing talking to somebody about something important, and then suddenly they look at their watch, what to speak if they look at their phone? What's happened is you've averted your attention. Now think about what it is for a second. What is attention? You're generating a kind of energy that you have. And this is the most, I will argue, important asset that you have in your life, is your attention. And actually, if you reduce it even more, the main thing you have to give anyone in this world is your attention. When you give somebody a thing, what counts is the attention, isn't it? Say yes. For instance, let me explain. So let's say I'm going to give you something, but I don't put any attention into it. Like, for instance, if I'm giving you a phone, and, you know, I just say, here, like that. How do you feel? How? Let the record show she didn't feel good about it. Okay. But if I come, I got you this phone, it's wrapped up in a box, it's got a bow on the top, it's got a little note that I hand wrote, and then I hand it over to you. How do you feel? She feels better now. Okay. What was the difference? It's the same thing, but the attention was different that I gave to it. And so it's not the things in this world that actually are meaningful to us, but it's the attention and the similar word intention behind it. And how are these words similar? They have the word ten, right? Say ten. So, you know, tendons. You have tendons that hold together muscle and bone in your legs and arms and other places. So a ten, the word ten, actually, it has the meaning that it holds things together. It stretches out, and it also holds things in place. So my attention, the way I give my attention, is what I connect to in this world. In fact, all the things that I have in the world are just things until I give them my attention. So a thing becomes my thing when I give it my... Correct. So, for instance, any of you have a car? Probably don't need one in Silicon Valley anymore. Those bicycles and stuff, you can ride them. You have a car. You volunteered, yes? Did you say? Yes. What is your name? Michelle has a car. Let's just, for the sake of experiment, say the car is parked right outside this window here. And anybody else have a car? Come on now. It's not going to hurt. Who else has a car? Michelle has a car. One other person with a car? Yeah, what is your name? Gary. Michelle and Gary. Okay, now let's say we hear the sound of a careening car coming around the corner, and it sounds like, if I triangulate, it's about the place where Michelle parked her car. She hears a side swipe, and she thinks, oh, that's my car. It just got hit, right? And she's thinking, my insurance lapsed, and my car just got hit. So how does Michelle feel? Just give me some details. she didn't feel good, but that, give me some more visceral details. What specifically happens? If I have a biofeedback machine on her, what's going to happen? Anxiety represented by? Heart rate, right? Anything else? Blood pressure and perspiration, thoughts of anxiety. Michelle jumps up. She runs to the window. She looks outside, and she notices it wasn't my car. It was Gary's car. Now, how does Michelle feel? She feels great. How does Gary feel? Not so good. Same symptoms, right? Now, a car is a car. There's lots of cars in Silicon Valley. There's lots of cars in the parking lot. And they're just cars. They're made out of the same material elements that we make a lot of stuff out of. But the difference is I've put my attention into one of them. And it's changed it. I've invested myself. I've extended. I've connected to it. And now it's not just a car. It's my car. And I go about the world connecting myself with many objects, not just objects, but also people, circumstances, environments. For instance, any of you have a sports team that you like? Yes? You said yes? Huh? The Warriors, okay. And so the Warriors win, and you feel what? They lost yesterday, and I can see you needed an extra cup of tea or coffee or something to, you know. So oftentimes people say, we won. And they're happy, and they dance, and then somebody else, we lost. I lived in St. Louis for a little while, and the people were, it's a baseball town, and people, when the team would lose, especially during the World Series, and the whole town would practically shut down and become ruinous, and we said, what's wrong? And we lost. You lost? You didn't even play. Doesn't look like you've played anything for a long time. So I become absorbed in thinking that this is my team, this is my car, and so forth. And how do I do that? Through my attention. Because although I'm a conscious being, as we're talking about conscious living, and wherever I place my attention, that place becomes practically connected to me through my attention and my consciousness. So this can be used very much in a positive way for our advantage in relationships, as an example. So if I give even a little bit more attention to somebody in my life, for instance, can you think of anybody that's in your life right now that you care about deeply, but that you haven't given what you feel is a high level of attention to in recent days or months? Can you think of anybody like that, that deserves a little more attention? Anyone? Yes. Your niece, okay. Now, what is your name?
Kevin.
Kevin. Well, Kevin, what do you think would happen if you just all of a sudden today gave some more attention to your niece? How do you think she'd respond?
I think she'd be appreciative.
She'd be appreciative. She could reciprocate, right? And this is an instant way to change the way relationships are going. It really doesn't cost anything, but once I turn my attention in somebody's direction and I give them more direct attention, then there's a transference of energy that is very powerful. And this can revive relationships. Take a look at any of the relationships you have, people in your life, wherever you are, wherever you live, and notice that if you simply turn your attention toward them a little bit, then your life will become enhanced. And it's one of the most fulfilling experiences. In fact, one might argue it's the most fulfilling experience because our relationships are our most valuable asset in this life. And the best way to revive them or enhance them is to give attention. In fact, Stephen Covey, anybody read any of Stephen Covey's books? In his Seven Secrets, he talks about the emotional bank account. So he points out that every person has a bank account in their heart. And that when you make a deposit, an emotional deposit, you're essentially putting money in their bank. And is it possible to make an emotional withdrawal in a relationship with somebody? Say yes. Yes. Can you think of an instance where this might have happened with you, with somebody else, made a withdrawal? You can think of something? We shouldn't ask you, right? Everyone can probably think of something. So he points out that if you get in the habit of making these deposits, then when the inevitable happens, and that is you mistakenly or because of being in a big hurry or being otherwise occupied, you make a withdrawal and you're not so considerate. At least there's enough so you don't become overdrawn. And the most important means of making such a deposit is giving attention to others. I just want you to, for 1 minute, I'm going to time it, and then I'll ask you to raise your hands to stop. Just turn to somebody in the room and give them some attention. Just talk to them and do whatever else you feel to make contact and give them your attention. Now, if you want it to be better, then turn to somebody that you haven't met before and see what happens, or that you haven't talked to. And you ready? Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
Valley a long time. I grew up in Lafayette, in the East Bay, and I moved back to Silicon Valley, not back to, but I think the first time about 30 years ago. Always good to come home. Nice to meet you, Manisha. Pleasure.
Okay. If you can hear me, raise your hand. If you can hear me, raise your hand. If you can hear me, raise your hand. Okay. If you can hear me, raise your hand. Okay, thanks. Wasn't that terrible? People hate getting attention, don't they? It doesn't take much. In fact, I just met several very lovely people, found out something about them, and I feel like I have a connection now, whereas before I didn't know, but it takes 1 second. And this is our great power. We're conscious beings, and where we point our consciousness will make all the difference in the world. And our energies will flow in that direction, because where attention goes... Okay, you got to really hit me hard with that one. Where attention goes... Yeah, and if you don't remember anything else from this meeting today, this gathering, if you take that one mantra with you, I like to call it a mantra, because something you can, a mantra for me is something you can pull out of your pocket anytime, and it will save you, and it will direct you, and take you in a certain direction. So remember this, because the mind tends to wander, the attention goes in many different directions, and there are enough distractions today in the world, correct me if I'm wrong, to keep us off our progressive track for a long, long time. So bringing our attention back to the right point. And one other point about just the idea of raising the consciousness and experiencing mindfulness, being introspective and so forth. This is the great topic of meditation. Just taking a little time every day to deliberately focus. Question. Do you have a question? Yes.
Yeah, I hesitated, but I do want to ask this question. So now that we are here, we know giving attention is very, very important, and we will give. So a lot of times the challenge I face is getting that attention. So I can give attention, but it's getting that. So do you have any suggestions on how to get that attention? Like, you know, what everything that you did with the phone and all, that's what I experience most of the day. Mm-hmm. So I can't go teach them, but if you have suggestions on how to handle that.
Well, hopefully you can just interact with everyone that's in this room from now on. The world is a reciprocal place, and eventually it's not that everyone is prepared or equipped to respond in appropriate ways, but our selective, we're all selective in who we relate to. And if we find that people don't reciprocate in very meaningful ways, or they're dismissive and so forth, then we're not obligated to try to push the issue. So one of the principles taught in the yoga literatures is in developing relationships appropriately. When one meets somebody that's superior, has more knowledge than I do, is more advanced, then one should appreciate that person. I show appreciation. If somebody's an equal, meet a peer, then one should make friendship, appropriate kinds of friendship. And if somebody's just coming up and obviously a neophyte compared to myself, then my duty is to try to serve that person, help them come up. These are three descriptions. Actually, in the process of yoga, there are ways in which one becomes mindful by dealing with one's environment and the people around us in appropriate ways. And also, it's mentioned in the yoga literatures that if people are unfriendly to you or harmful or bullies and things like that, then one should be what's called in Sanskrit, upeksha. One should avoid them and not have a lot to do with them, unless you have to, in which case you should be official and do as much as you need to. But be selective. That's also important. Yes.
Thank you. And I'm bringing this up because other people may have children here as well. So when children are teenagers, right, I mean, we would, as parents, we want to pay more and more attention as usual, but they want to draw a boundary that, I don't know how to explain that better, but they don't want a whole lot of attention.
Of course, I don't claim to be an expert in child development and psychology, but what I have learned is, based on this principle with children, is if you, during the times that you can in their life, give them appropriate and as much attention as possible. And in many ways, I equate a love with attention. If you're giving attention, you're actually giving the best part of yourself, right? And during the times of their life that you can give attention, give as much as possible, because there may be another time which you can't. And that deposit that you make at the times when you can make it, when they're open to taking that kind of love and attention, will come back later in life. There's a way in which there are sociological and psychological phenomena which require children to, according to some theories, break free from the nest at a certain time. My mother was a sociologist and my father was a psychologist, so they used to talk about some of these things, especially when I became a teenager and decided to become a monk. So they had many theories to explain why I was breaking free from the nest. However, I always appreciated their support, even though I broke away from them for a few years. I came back in a very meaningful way, because I remembered the investment they had put into me. And even as when I became a monk and sort of moved away from the family unit for a little while just to find myself and become really focused on my lifestyle, I remember one time I got malaria, and I was flying back from India, and I landed in New York at Kennedy, and I had a really high fever. I think they tested me there. And they said, you have a malaria. You're going into quarantine in the hospital in New York City. So they put me in there, And somebody said, who's paying for all this? And I said, oh, you have insurance. And I had no idea I had insurance. My parents maintained it, my health insurance. And I always remembered things like that. Even though I didn't acknowledge it immediately, it became a part of my relationship with them, appreciation later. So they'll thank you later. So where attention goes, energy flows. And the second of the keys to, you can turn the light out so we get the full impact. There you go. All right. The second of the keys, which I'll present today, is attitude. And fortunately, this is another aspect of our personality and our life that we have some control over. You can adjust your attitude. Has anybody ever told you that? No one ever told you you need an attitude adjustment? You can adjust your attitude. It is adjustable. And when you adjust your attitude, you'll notice that many things around you also adjust. And it's a very fulfilling experience. I'm going to give you a few specific points. One aspect of attitude is what my teacher used to call your appreciating capacity. And this could also be said in one word, gratitude. Have you ever noticed that when you have gratitude, that you feel happy no matter where you are, what you have? But if you don't have gratitude, then it doesn't matter how much you have or where you are. What's the most idyllic place you can think of right now? Disneyland? Muir Woods? Give me a nice place. The beach. Which beach? Where? Okay, let's say you're on a beautiful beach in the Caribbean, and you suddenly start feeling ungrateful for being there. Perhaps you think, you know, why did I have to take such a cheap airline to get here? The person who bought me the ticket could have afforded a little bit more. I don't like the cabin they gave me on the beach here. It's a little too cold for me. There's a million ways in which I can become ungrateful. And then how does my environment look suddenly? Not so nice. I can't even appreciate it. However, when I increase my appreciating capacity, when I have gratitude, when I develop gratitude for what I already have, then everything starts to appear as a great gift and an asset. And it also keeps me mindful. I'm in the present, appreciating what I have, not thinking from a place of incompleteness that I need to have something more. This isn't good enough. So this a kind of appreciation or gratitude can be cultivated by looking at very carefully at what one already has and appreciating it. For instance, everybody have a heartbeat right now? Were you thinking about it before I asked you? Do you appreciate that your heart is beating? When one day I was lying on my side, I was taking a little nap. I take a 22-minute nap every day, scientific. And as I was just coming out of my nap, I tend to wake up before my alarm goes off, and I started noticing that my heart was beating. I was lying on my left side. And I thought, how is that? How is that happening? I noticed it's beating, and I had a conversation with my heart. I say, you know, I really appreciate what you're doing for me. You're beating away like this, and, you know, I never really give you anything for it. You just serve me. And my heart spoke back, and it said, you know, it's my duty. This is what I do. But I can't guarantee that I'm going to go on forever. I could stop at any time. You know, it's not up to me, really. And in this dialogue I had with my heart, when I got up from my nap, I felt very inspired because I had expanded my appreciating capacity. What I had been taking for granted, I can have a lousy day and then think, I hate the whole world and the way the economy's going or the politics or whatever it is. But if I realize I have a heart that's beating right now, is that something I could definitely appreciate? Well, I'll tell you, if you don't, if it stops for a few minutes and then it starts, then you'll really appreciate. In fact, there's a I heard an interview with a famous music critic. And she said, I was a snob until I had a near-death experience. And after my near-death experience and I was revived, I actually died and was brought back. Now I appreciate elevator music. I appreciate the music they play in grocery stores. Whereas before I would write it off as this is kitsch. It's complete garbage. Shouldn't even be on in the world. So attitude has to do a lot with our appreciating capacity. And if you simply concentrate on changing and expanding your capacity to appreciate what you have right now, starting with your own beating heart, then the way you interact with the world and the way you feel about your environment will drastically change. The second about attitude is, and if with your permission, I'm going to look at my watch. May I? Because I don't see a clock in this room. Do I have your permission? Okay. did anybody here ever carry a grudge? This is amazing. Okay, one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11. What is a grudge? What's a grudge? Anyone? Some negative feeling. Actually, what a grudge is a fierce little animal. It kind of looks like a wolverine. And people get these little grudges and they carry them under their arm wherever they go. And some the world record for holding a grudge is a whole lifetime. There's in the Guinness Book of World Records, one person carried a grudge around for a whole life. So one way that one can change one's attitude, if you ever find that you have a grudge, even if you're carrying it for 5 minutes, it's a snarly, a vicious little animal that I carry under my arm. It growls at people, it growls at me, and it's a great burden to carry. So what to do with grudges? You take them out to the edge of the forest, and you say, okay, go ahead, run free, let it go. And this awareness that I'm carrying a grudge and then letting it go is a great unburdening of the consciousness. There's no need to carry grudges wherever we go. Now, a mantra from this section of attitude that you may find helpful. I heard it one day when I was listening to an interview on NPR radio with Michael Krasny, and he was speaking to a very intelligent gentleman from Oklahoma, and the gentleman referred to himself as an Okie, which is a slang for somebody from Oklahoma. And Michael Krasny, being as politically correct as he is, stops. He says, wait, hold it. I don't know if the audience will appreciate that you just used the word Okie. And he said, well, I am an Okie. And he said, yeah, but still. And so the man, rather than getting into an argument or something, he said, okay, no problem. I live to be corrected. Would you like to try it? It's a mantra. Do you dare try this? Are you ready? I live to be corrected. Say it two more times. Now turn to somebody next to you and tell a conscious living being that you live to be corrected. Go ahead, try it. I live to be corrected. I live to be corrected. Now, if you tell it to a stranger, that's not so dangerous, but if you tell it to your spouse, or if you tell it to your boss, what might happen then? The point is this. It's not that we should simply be a doormat, and that if somebody bullies us, we just, that's the way it is. I don't react in any way. But the point is to take the lesson from everything that happens to us. And rather than reacting and closing down, when something happens to me, or when somebody actually does correct me, if I use this mantra properly, then I'm able to actually take in a lesson rather than closing down. And this you can experiment with in various ways instead of what usually happens, which is that I become defensive from somebody trying to teach me something that I think I already know. There's a way in which in conversation, when somebody's speaking to me, I'm often thinking, as soon as this person stops talking, then I'm going to tell them what I think, and it's a much better idea, and I'm going to interject. But if I'm thinking I live to be corrected, and I'm listening to their perspective, I'm able to take it in very readily. And this is one of the principles of changing attitude that changes the way I interact with the world, and it leads to inner fulfillment. And the last aspect that I'll present today in attitude is universally applicable and something that anyone can introduce at any time into their psyche. And that is to develop a service attitude. Now, a lot of people are looking at the world as a place to exploit. And either subtly or in a very deliberate way, I may be looking at other people and circumstances in a way that I can exploit. However, if one develops an attitude of service, that is thinking, what can I do to be of service to others or to the circumstance? And I put myself into it fully. There's a way in which the yoga literatures say that, first of all, and this is actually my interjection, you'll be appreciated wherever you go. Everybody likes somebody with a service mind. Thinking like, how can I contribute to the situation? How can I help the group? How can I help others? If someone's actually sincerely thinking like that, they become a great asset to others and to organizations and so forth. So service mind. Furthermore, the point that the yoga literatures make is that actually this is a source of satisfaction. When I give myself selflessly, it's counterintuitive, when I give myself selflessly, I grow. By giving, I grow. By thinking about how to take, and no matter how much I get by taking, I become stifled, and I actually feel blocked up. So the energy of life, all of which is at our discretion to a certain degree, that we use in service mind and serving others with the attitude of service, opens up the heart, and it gives us fulfillment. Why is it we hear during holiday season often, it's better to receive? Is that true? Well, of course, we don't know if it's true or not. It's something, it's subjective. However, I read an interview when I was writing a book, and in the interview of thousands, tens of thousands of college students were asked, is it better to give or to receive? What do you think they said? They said, the majority, by a long shot, said it's better to give. It's kind of an intuitive thing. But why is that? And if you consider that principle, the service principle and service mind, and you apply it in your life, you'll find that you grow and you become satisfied. And the last principle I'm going to present today, one of the keys, is application. So this is deceptively simple, but there's a way in which when I'm working towards a worthy goal, I feel satisfied. This is common knowledge. But oftentimes, I feel that because I can't do everything, I might as well not do anything. So one of the tenets of Eastern philosophy, in fact, I just came from Japan. I was there for 3 weeks in April. And there's a teaching in Japan about how to move any project forward and how to move in your life in a steady and deliberate way by taking smaller steps than you usually do. And so in this application, the idea is that when you're stuck, when your energy's stuck and you can't move, that just take the very smallest step that you can possibly imagine. For instance, have you ever been in a situation in your living space, in your home, where the place was a mess? Please say yes. Is it right now? Okay. It happens. You are all very busy people. And, you know, keeping up a pristine environment is very difficult, but it's good for the consciousness also to live in an uncluttered way and to be clean. So maybe you're sitting there and you're looking and you say, this place is totally unkempt, but I can't clean this up. I don't have time. And besides, I don't even feel like it. So what to do? just do one little thing. Instead of trying to clean the whole house, clean one little corner, or even just pick up one sock. Don't do more than that. In fact, author of a book on this philosophy, it's a Japanese philosophy, writes about how he coaches people. He's actually a doctor, a psychologist. So he's telling about a woman who was obese, and she was developing diseases that were related to her obesity. And so she came to this counselor, and he advised her that you should follow the advice of your doctor and start exercise. She said, I've never exercised in my life, and I don't think I can start now. She had this inertia principle, couldn't move. So he told her, asked her, what do you do all day? She said, I watch television and I eat. So he said, now, what I would like you to try for homework for the next week is during the commercials, stand up. Just stand up. So she came back next week. She said, I did it. I stood up during the commercials. He said, now, this week, when the commercial comes, you walk in place 5 times. So she came back the next week, walked in place 5 times. And you might see where this is going. He helped her to move gradually towards walking around the block. And then she started going for long hikes. And then she started adding some resistance training. And then she lost the weight over a couple of years and had started to recover her health. So this idea of application is very important in our lives to fulfillment, because oftentimes I become completely stopped by the circumstances, which are so overwhelming, and especially in this day and age when we have so many things to do, that we may think, well, maybe I just won't do anything except for stare into a screen. And now we'll take a few reflections. That means anything that you heard so far that stuck in your mind.
So these are from online. We have about 150 to 200 participants online. So so the motivation for some of them to come to this session was the concept of mindfulness is important. We are all on the path to greater fulfillment. And some others came for stress relief. I came to find some stress reduction techniques. And some had questions about how to handle anxiety and depression and how to manage stress-related issues.
Those are very helpful for developing next topics. And hopefully some of the principles that we presented today can, to some degree, address some of those points. What else? Reflections from today. Just feel free to reflect back. What one thing did you hear today that you take out of here in your pocket? When you go out in the hallway, someone grabs you by the arm and says, what was that guy talking about in there? What's the one thing that you'll tell them? Thank you very much. One thing she will say is?
Where attention goes, energy flows.
Thank you very much. You made my day. Okay. Everyone say it.
Where attention.
Yeah, meditate on that mantra. It's very powerful. What else? More reflections. We've got mantras going here. Say it.
I live to be corrected.
Oh, powerful, yes. I live to be corrected. So at least you got two mantras to take out, right? So mantra means you got to practice it. So homework is when you come into a situation, and I know you will, where somebody tells you something, and you think, why is that guy just leave me alone? Just turn and say, I live to be corrected. And see what happens. See how the environment changes. They'll be shocked about what happened. Okay, what else did you hear? Okay, be thankful. Expand your appreciating capacity. Our heart is, we're actually little appreciators. You can appreciate everything. There's something to appreciate about everything and everyone. And the more I develop that appreciating capacity, the more I increase it, the more contentment I'll feel. Gratitude is the most powerful emotion that one can develop. So work on gratitude. What else? Do one little thing at a time. Start small and get momentum. Yes.
So online, one of them had the comment that the three A's, attention, attitude, and application. It's easy to remember. All of them are
AAA. So the three A's are, number one, Number two? And number three? Yeah, those three, you could take their keys. And when you have a principle like that, it's that's universally applicable, you can take it and try it out. And that's the application part also. Take your mantras out with you and practice them in your life and see what happens. See how the environment changes around you and see if it doesn't change your level of contentment. We'll take two more. Yes. Take baby steps. Yes. In the application, start with the smallest thing. This is one of the things in the very famous book, Getting Things Done, by David Allen. Many of you have read the book, right? David Allen, Getting Things Done? Yes. In that, he said, what stops us often is we're thinking past the next thing that I actually have to do. If you're going to build, make a building, or if you got to develop a project, you're thinking in all the way, thinking of all the things that you can't do. But if you think of the next thing that you can do and just do that and stay in the moment, be mindful as you're doing your work that I'm doing one thing at a time and it's moving me towards my goal, then you'll stay mindful even when you're doing your work. As you're doing work and you're dealing with multiple things at a time, but deal with one thing at a time very mindfully. One more.
So online, one small step changes the dance.
One small step?
Changes the dance.
Changes the dance.
Yeah.
Wasn't that poetical? That's nice. One small step changes the dance. Okay, so we've come to the end of the time. It went very quickly, but I feel for me, being with you, it's been a life-changing experience. And just the fact that you came in here is a gesture that you gave to me, and I'm taking it very personally, that you came here and gave one extremely valuable hour of your life to sit here and listen. So I'm so deeply touched, and I thank you very much for being here, and I look forward to meeting some of you again and hearing how you've applied any of these principles. Thank you very much.